Okay, good evening, and welcome to tonight's shiur on Parashat Tzav. Parashat Tzav is, in many respects, a continuation of the previous sidra of Parashat Vayikra. It's to do with Korbanot, it's Torat Kohanim, but nevertheless, there's still lessons that we can learn from here. Lessons that are relevant to us, and one of the things that's just a bit of trivia, but I always find of interest with Parashat Tzav, is of course that the Gematria of Tzav is 96, and lo and behold, there are 96 Psukim in this week's Parasha. I don't know if that means anything, but nevertheless, it's always a nice bit of information there. Let's share some Makorot and look at what the Parasha has to tell us. So, want to start right at the very beginning. The opening Psukim, learn a few Rashis and expand on them a little bit. Vayidaber Adonai Moshe Lemor, Hashem spoke to Moshe saying, Tzavet Aaron ve'banav Lemor, command Aaron and his sons thusly, Zot Torat Ola, this is the rule or the rules that apply to the Ola, to the burnt offering, Hi Ha'olal Mokdal HaMizbeach Kol HaLaila, that's the Ola which goes on the wood pile through the whole night, Ad HaBoker till the morning, Ve'esh HaMizbeach Tu Kadbo, and the fire on the Mizbeach will burn on it, will conflagrate it. So Rashi picks up on the fact that the Lashon here, it's not unique, but it's certainly not usual. It's Tzavet Aaron. Very often we have Daber Hashem Moshe Lemor, Daber El Aharon, Daber El Bnei Yisrael, speak to them. On this occasion we've got Tzavet Aaron, command Aharon. Commanding is obviously a more powerful, a stronger Lashon than Daber is. So our question is, why is it telling us Tzav rather than Daber? So let's look at Rashi. Rashi says, Ein Tzav el Lashon Zeruz, Miyad Vladorot. Whenever you have the term Tzav, it means that a person's got to be strongly encouraged to do whatever this might be, now and at times in the future as well. Amar Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Shimon said, "Biyoter tzarich hakatuv lezareis." The why do we need certain cases where it's important to be mezareis, where it's important to give this extra encouragement? Makom sheish bo chesron kis. Cases where there's a financial loss, meaning in regular mitzvot, we can just say daber, do it. But in cases where there's chesron kis, cases where there's a financial loss involved, then a person needs a bit more encouragement. So the question is, of course, here, what's the chesron kis? In this instance, this is the olah, the burnt offering on the Mizbeach. Why do we talk here about Chesron Kis? So let's look at the Maharal of Prague in the Gur Aryeh. The Maharal says, V'im Tomar, you might say, Hare Kan Ein Chesron Kis. There's not really any Chesron Kis here. No, who's losing La Kohen? The Kohen's certainly not got any Chesron Kis here. The Kohen is offering up a korban from communal funds. So why does it need sheyomar lashon tzav? Why does it need to have this stronger expression of tzav? V'yesh lomar, so his answer is, d'shapir ikha chesron kis, in actual fact, there is chesron kis here. There is a financial loss. Mishum d'hayah ha'avodah mutal ha'kohen, because the kohen has to come and do this avodah. V'hayah bishul zem v'atel mimlachto. And the Kohen, as a result, isn't able to get on with his own work, his own things that he needs to do. And we'll add into the equation that, you know, generally speaking, with the Korbanot, the Kohanim got a share in it. They got a kickback, if you like. They received something for offering up the korbanot. They got some of the meat or whatever it was. In the case of the Ola, it's a burnt offering. They don't get that at all. So they're having to take time off work to offer up korbanot that they're not benefiting from. And that is the Chesron Kis. So we don't need cases where a person is actually losing financially from, you know, from their purse. And I call any case where you're going to be losing earnings or something like that, it's called Chesron Kis. So that's the way that the Maharal explains Rashi. I've got a bit of a question on the Maharal. I don't really understand what he's saying, because it's true that the Ola itself, the Kohen didn't get anything from it, but the Kohanim came to the Beit HaMikdash. There were 24 Mishmarot. The Kohanim came twice a year, and they would offer up over the course of the time they were in the Beit HaMikdash, and, you know, it was essentially each Mishmar, each group, was divided into seven Batei Avot, seven family groups, and each one served on one day. But sometimes, if there were lots of korbanot, they'd be called to serve another day. And over the course of the Beit HaMikdash was a busy place. There were always korbanot being offered up, and whenever korbanot were being offered up, people were, the Kohanim were getting portions of them. So it's true for the Ola itself, they didn't necessarily get anything back in return. But the Ola was part of their duties in the Beit HaMikdash, and they did get, they would have received various korbanot to eat from. So I don't know why we're looking particularly, it's not as if the Kohen could say, okay, well, instead of offering up the Ola, I'll go into the office and then I'll come back later in the day for the Shalamim and the Nadarim and the Nadavot and the Chatat, etc., etc. They couldn't do that. They had to be there anyhow. Unless we say that maybe there was some Kohanim who, if you had lots of Kohanim in the Beit Av, then some of them, would only get a chance to offer up from the Ola, and they wouldn't gain anything from it. Nevertheless, I would have thought that the privilege of offering up korbanot in the Beit HaMikdash, which was a privilege that the Kohanim got and nobody else got, I'd have thought that in itself was compensation. But so that's a question I've got on the Maharal's answer to his question on Rashi, and indeed a number of the Mepharshim ask that question on Rashi. Anyhow, let's move on. So the Kohen, the Kohanim, they offer up the Ola in Pasuk Bet. Then Pasuk Gimel, we've got V'lavasha Kohen Midovad, V'michnas Eivad Yilbasha B'soro. So the Kohen wears his linen uniform and wears linen trousers on his flesh. V'hirim et ha'deshen asher tochal ha'esh et ha'ola l'mizbeach. And then the Kohen had a mitzvah of what we call Trumat ha'deshen, of taking some of the ashes from the Mizbeach, Samor Eitzel HaMizbeach, and placing them alongside the Mizbeach. There was lots of meat burnt on the Mizbeach every day, and the burnt meat would create lots of ashes. That would all be piled up on the Mizbeach in an area or a heap called the Tapuach. Tapuach is what we call an apple. It was tapuach shaped. And every day the Kohen had to come along and take some of the ashes off of the Mizbeach and put them alongside the Mizbeach. Now the Pasuk told us, that was Pasuk Gimel. And then Pasuk Dalet tells us, U'pashatet begadav u'lavash begadim achirim. The Kohen then will remove his begadim, remove his good quality priestly garments, and put on other begadim. Seems they were priestly garments. And then he would take the ashes from the side of the Mizbeach, he would take them outside of the Mikdash, somewhere else, and leave them there. So there were two stages. Every day there was Trumat HaDeshen. ashes were taken off the Mizbeach and placed alongside the Mizbeach. And then every now and then, when the pile alongside the Mizbeach was too big, so then the ashes would be taken out of the Mikdash. Now Rashi says, "Upashat et begadav, he shall remove his clothes and change his clothes." Ein zu chova el aderech eretz. It's not that you're not allowed to do this whilst wearing your regular big day kahuna, but it's just a matter of derech eretz. Shelo yilach leich b'hotzat hadeshim begadim shehu mishamish behen tamid. You don't want the begadim that you're going to be serving with in the Beit HaMikdash to get dirty. Remember, we think about ashes. Oh, yeah, just some ashes. Okay, ashes are a bit dirty, but you can sort of brush it off. Remember, these are ashes from the carcasses of many animals. These were greasy ashes. These were, you know, they got everything filthy and smelly and greasy. You couldn't just, you got a bit on your clothes. You could, if you tried to brush it off, you just made it worse mess. Then he has a very interesting mashal. He says, "Begadim shebishal behen kadeira l'rabo, al yimzog bo kosta l'rabo." The clothes that you wear when you're cooking as a servant in the kitchen aren't the same clothes that you'll wear when you come and serve the wine or whatever it is to your master. Meaning, if you're the chef and the butler. So you'll wear one thing in the kitchen when you're doing all the dirty work, and then when you come and serve the wine, you'll wear something else. Likewise with the Kohen. When he's doing the Avodah, he needs to make sure he's got nice clean clothes on. When he's doing the Hotzat HaDeshen, so then he can wear other clothes, doesn't matter if they get dirty. That's why he wears other clothes, Pechutim Mahem, less fancy, less good. Votziet Hadeshen, and then he'll take out the ashes, Hatzibur Batapuach, which is all there on the heap. When there's lots of it there and there's not space, then he'll bring it out. That's not something that has to be done every day. But the truma, taking some ashes, is a chova every day. Clearing the whole thing off is something which was done periodically. So that's the nature of the Trumat HaDeshen. We'll look at one or two more points about it in a moment. But the pasuk also says, "For Eish al Mizbeach tu kadbo," the Eish that was on the Mizbeach will burn the Ola. Rabba ken yikidot harbe. So the sugi in Masechet Yoma, the Mishnah talks about, it's not quite clear how many fires there were on the Mizbeach. The pasuk says Al Mokdah, okay, on the fire. The pasuk says Va'esh Hamizbeach Tu Kadbo. So you've got Eish and Tu Kadbo, Eish Tamid Tu Kad, and then another pasuk which says continual fire Tu Kad shall burn. So there's a machloket, how many fires were on the Mizbeach? Possibly even five fires burning all the time on the Mizbeach. There's a machloket, how many marachot were there? Now, it's of note that the Trumat HaDeshen, the clearing of the ashes from the Mizbeach, was actually part of the Avodah. We might have thought that, you know, this is the job for the cleaners, for the caretaking staff. You know, the Trumat HaDeshen is just, if you like, a Hechsher mitzvah. It's something which is there to, you know, make space on the Mizbeach, etc., etc., clear off the debris from the previous day. But in actual fact, that's not the case. It's an integral part of the Avodah. The Trumat HaDeshen is the first part of the daily sacrificial service. And one of the questions is, why is that the case? Why does the day start with the sacrificial service? And also, why is the pasuk telling us particularly that the Kohen has to wear Midor Vad for this, that he has to wear, now the way we translated it, Midor Vad, his uniform that is made out of linen, but midor can also mean kamidato, that it needs to fit him perfectly. Why is it in the context of Trumat HaDeshen we're saying that it has to fit him perfectly? We don't say that with any of the other avodot. Now, it's true with all of the avodah. You know, you don't want the Kohen showing up looking like, you know, he's borrowed somebody else's clothes and his trousers are either flapping round his ankles or, you know, the sleeves are, you know, far too long and you can't see his hands. But why is this requirement mentioned, particularly in the context of Trumat HaDeshen? So let's look at the Kli Yakar. The Kli Yakar says, Yakavanazu his Kir Haramat HaDeshen, Ki Atikun Hu HaDeshen, Sheyomar Vanochi Afar Va'efer. It's all about the ashes. The ashes, think about what Avraham said. Avraham said, I am Afar Va'efer, I'm dust and ashes. It's a sense of humility. And then, after Avraham Avinu had said, recognized that essentially he's just earth and ashes, then he actually became very successful. Anybody else who is humble, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will ultimately raise them up. That's why it says that in the pasuk Vehirim Et Hadeshen, we can, Al Derech Hadrash, homiletically interpret it to mean that HaKadosh Baruch Hu will raise up the person who regards himself as being Deshen, as regards himself as being nothing other than ashes. V'lazeh parat beit begadim einu she'ilbash ha-kohenu machaper. That's why it's mentioned with these begadim that the Kohen wears them. V'lavash ha-kohen midor bad kemidato, needs to fit him. Shelo ye beged nesiuto aroch mimenu, shouldn't be too big for him. Ela kemidato, it needs to fit him perfectly. Kimandu lavash mada yilbash mada. The Kohen who has to wear the big day kahuna should wear begadim that are appropriate to his size. Kemidato, i.e., to his what is appropriate for him. For lo ye lech bigdolot uvniflaot mimenu umichnesevad. He shouldn't wear things which are too big for him or too splendid for him. He should wear clothes that are fitting to his station. And the michnasei bad and the trousers, that's hamachaprim al gilui arayot, which Chazal tell us are an atonement for sexual immorality. These are mentioned particularly here. Because kol hamitka'ek ilu bag al kol harayot, anybody who is arrogant, it's as if they've been involved in prohibited relationships. V'simat hadeshen etzel hamizbeach, gam hamizbeach mora al geder ha'anava. The mizbeach is also about humility. So what the Kli Yakar is saying is all these things are combining together to teach us the notion of humility, and that is the first stage of the day, dealing with the deshen, which reminds you that even though you're a kohen and even you've got the privilege of serving on the mizbeach, nevertheless you need to be humble about it, and your clothing needs to be michnas midorvad. It needs to fit your size, mustn't be too big for you, meaning don't get. Or too small for you. Don't get too big for your boots, I suppose, is what we said. The Kohanim were always barefoot, but they're allegorical boots, as it were. Don't be bigger than your station. That is the secret behind the Avodah. So that's what the Kli Yakar is telling us. There's a very lovely piece in Hadrash V'Ha'iyun, where he points out about this discussion, the Eish Tamid to Kat al HaMizbeach, there needs to be a permanent fire on the Mizbeach, and Lo Tichbe, it mustn't be extinguished. So if it's, I'm told, Eish Tamid, it needs to be permanent, why do I need the Pasuk to say Lo Tichbe, that it shouldn't be extinguished? So he quotes the Yerushalmi Masechet Yoma that says, Lo Tichbe Af B'Masa'ot. You don't extinguish the fire on the Mizbeach, even when the Mizbeach is in transit. This was one of the wonderful things. When they were carrying the Mizbeach They're carrying it from place to place. The fire was still burning on it. So what's the significance of that? So he says, al derech hadrash, that's we've got eish tamid tukad al hamizbeach. If you have a permanent fire on the mizbeach when it's in situ, then when it's in transit, also lo tichbeh, it won't be extinguished. And he says, what do we mean by what are we referring to when we think about the mizbeach? The mizbeach, he says, the mizbeach and the mikdash and the mishkan, they're all representing the Jewish home. If you have eish tamid tukad burning strongly in the Jewish home, at home, then when you're away from home as well, lo tichbeh, it won't get extinguished. Problem is, if you don't have the fire burning strongly at home, then when people leave the home, it's going to be much harder to ensure that it doesn't get extinguished. People who have high standards at home, those standards will stick with them when they go away. If you don't have strong standards at home, then you can't expect much good to be happening when you're away. You know, the common discussion about, you know, the kids leave home and go off to university or wherever it is, that if the standards were strong at home, there's a bigger chance of them retaining them when they're away from home. If the standards were weak at home, so then it's going to be very hard to keep that flame burning when they are away from home. Let's move on to the korbanot of the Kohanim that were brought when they were consecrated as Kohanim, and we see various korbanot that they had to bring, including a minchat chavitin, including a meal offering of a handful of the various meal offerings had to be brought. Now that was the Kohanim brought that when they were consecrated. But the Kohen Gadol was an interesting position in the Beit HaMikdash. The Kohen Gadol wasn't necessarily that busy. He was like kind of as busy as he wanted to be. Yom Kippur, he had a busy day. Yom Kippur, the Avodah had to be done by the Kohen Gadol. The rest of the time, the Kohen Gadol didn't have to do the Avodah if he didn't want to. If he wanted to, then he could. If he wanted to sit at home learning Gemara, then he could do that as well. I don't know if he could watch YouTube videos, but certainly learning Gemara he was allowed to do. He was entitled to take Chelek Barosh if he wanted to, you know, he got first choice of the meat to eat. But, you know, with lots of korbanot, there's a limit to how much meat one Kohen Gadol can eat. You know, okay, they'll have a steak every day, you know, but there was a lot of meat. What he did have to do was he had to offer up a minchat chavitin, a meal offering, every single day, machatzita ba'boker, machatzita ba'erev. He had to offer it up in two parts, half in the morning and half in the evening. And that was different to all the other Kohanim. All the other Kohanim only did that when they were consecrated. The Kohen Gadol had to do it every day, and it was regarded as some sort of guilt or sin offering. The question is, why did he have to bring such a korban? So the Abarbanel actually gives 10 answers to his question. The Abarbanel is famous for answering lots of questions. And sometimes not only does he ask lots of questions, but he gives lots of answers to any particular question. So we won't go through all of them, but we'll just pick up on a few of them. His third answer is, so that people who are sinners and have to bring a korban to the Beit HaMikdash won't be embarrassed. When they see that Kohen Gadol, every day he brings, that he's bringing two sacrifices every day, two meal offerings to atone every day. So even the Kohen Gadol's bringing atonement offerings, we can also bring. The fourth reason, he says, is that the Kohen Gadol brings a meal offering every day, so that the poor people who are bringing meal offerings won't feel that they're the only ones who are offering up meal offerings. They won't be embarrassed by that, because the Kohen Gadol is also doing that. And the Kohen Gadol brings a meal offering in particular, to, he says in number 5, to impress upon him that he shouldn't get too haughty about his position. In terms of, a poor person brings a meal offering, you, Mr. Kohen Gadol, are also like a poor person. You're no better than them. You also bring a meal offering. The sixth reason he gives is that the Kohanim in general, the Kohen Gadol in particular, benefited from the Korbanot without giving anything up. The Chavitei Kohen Gadol, the Mincha offering of the Kohen Gadol, was something which was totally consumed by the Mizbeach. So every day the Kohanim had to bring something, the Kohen Gadol had to bring something which was from his own, which he paid for himself, and that would be burnt totally, and that was sort of, if you like, the Kohanim losing something as well as as well as gaining. So we have lots of explanations there about why the Kohen Gadol would bring that korban. Now, it's always interesting. Parashat Tzav always comes up round about Pesach time. Quite often, it can even be Shabbat Hagadol. And one of the things that we learn in Parashat Tzav is about the kashering process. When things absorb forbidden substances, how they're supposed to be kashered, etc., etc. And we've got some psukim about if sacred meat touches non-sacred meat, or vice versa. I want to share with you what Reb Menachem Zaks in his Sefer Menachem Tzion says. He points out we've got two psukim. We've got a pasuk which says, "Kol asher yigabif sara yikdash." So anything that comes into contact with the korban, then yikdash, gets some of the sanctity of that korban, and means can't be used for something which is non-sacred. V'ashe yizeh midama al habeged, ashe yizeh alav, aleha techabes b'makom kadosh. And if any of the korban, the blood, splashes onto the begadim, the clothes of the kohen, then it has to be washed in a holy area. But the point is, you come into contact with something holy, you get some of that holiness, and some of the restrictions of holiness apply to you. There's another pasuk though which says, "V'habasar sheyigah b'chol tamei lo ye'achel." Any meat that comes into contact, any korban that comes into contact with anything which is tamei, mustn't be eaten. Now, he points out that in both cases we've got the pasuk, the words "asheyigah," "kol asheyigah," and the habasar asheyiga, anything that comes into contact with. But he says there's a subtle difference as well. He says in the first pasuk, which is talking about something non-sacred that comes into contact with something which is sacred, what's the din? The non-sacred meat doesn't become kodesh just by touching, but it only becomes kodesh if it absorbs from the kodesh. Meaning, if I've got a hot piece of korban, a hot piece of meat, and it touches another hot piece of non-sacred meat, then the non-sacred meat will absorb from the sacred meat and will become kodesh itself. But where the tamei meat touches sacred meat, all it needs to do is touch. It doesn't need to be hot. It's just Negia Ba'alma. And he says this is telling us a very important lesson. For something Kodesh to influence something which is Chol, it needs to be much more powerful than when something Chol or something Tameh influences something Kodesh. Something Tameh, just by touching it, can have an impact. Something Tumah just touches something which is Kodesh and it makes an impact. Whereas for the other way round, it needs to be more than just touching. It needs to penetrate. And this is, you know, an important lesson for us. It's both in terms of us being careful about what we come into contact with. You know, it's very easy for us to be influenced by Tumah in our lives. Just need to have a brush with it, and that can affect us, on the one hand. On the other hand, if we want to have a positive effect on our secular surroundings, we can't just brush it, but we really need to penetrate it and be very, very, very close to it. So I think that's a very lovely idea. We'll conclude with a thought about the Korban Todah. There's lots about the Korban Todah, the Thanksgiving offering. There's a Medrash, in the Medrash Tanchuma, which says that in the future all Korbanot will cease to exist, except for the Korban Todah. The Korban Todah will always exist. Now, it's not quite clear what it means, all the Korbanot will cease to exist. Does that mean there'll be no Korban Pesach? There'll be no Shtar Lechem? It relates a little bit to Tehillah's question last week. Rav Moshe Sternbach in Talmud Daat, he says, what does it mean? It means that in the future, most Korbanot will cease to exist, because everybody will believe in Hashem, people won't sin, and there'll be no need for people to bring sin offerings to the Beit HaMikdash. However, the Korban Todah will always exist, because at the same time as everybody, when everybody realizes, oh, there's Hashem in the world, we need to behave ourselves and not sin, they'll also look around themselves and say, oh, you know, yes, Hashem has done this for us, Hashem has done that for us, we need to give thanks to Hashem. And that's why all the other Korbanot will cease and the Korban Todah will continue to exist. It doesn't mean to say that, you know, the slate will be wiped, there'll be no din of the other Korbanot. The other Korbanot will still be on the statute books, but many of them won't be brought. You know, there won't be sins. When people see in broad daylight the glory of Hashem, they won't want to sin. And when they see the glory of Hashem, then they will want to give a Korban Todah, thanking Hashem for the goodness that he's given them. So that's where we're going to stop for this evening. And